This is the Apple This Extra.
Welcome to Apple This Extra number 47. I'm Jamie Pauls, joined this time around by Alex Hall, where I assume, Alex, that it is probably cold and blustery in the state of Maine right now.
Well, you know, cold's relative. We got up above freezing for the last couple of days, so it's pretty warm here, actually.
Okay, good deal.
Also, about 40.
Yeah, very good. Well, that's maybe not bad. That's about what it's been here in Missouri, so that's kind of interesting. Joining us this time around is co-founder of Sneaky Crab, Justin Ng.
I love that name.
I know. That's a great name. Justin, you're in California, right?
Yes, I am. Sunny California, or so people would think it is. It's actually been quite rainy, but trying to stay dry. It's been unusually wet.
You guys, Sneaky Crab, that is, received a Golden Apple Award this year, or 2016, rather, from Apple This. Developer of the Year because of a game that you guys have released that's sort of taken the blind community by storm. And that is a game called Timecrest. And Timecrest also received a Golden Apple for best game, best iOS game. So you guys are just really doing well here among the Apple This community. And Justin, I've had a chance to visit with you before, and I really enjoy talking to you, and I'm anxious to bring Alex into this conversation because I want to talk to you about Timecrest. First of all, for those who may not know, and there are probably some listening who don't, just kind of in your words, tell us what the game Timecrest is.
Great question. Timecrest is a game, a story that comes deeply from our hearts. Timecrest is a game about a character named Ash who finds that the world of Alencia, where Ash lives, is about to be destroyed by meteors. And as a last desperate attempt, Ash reaches out to contact you on your iPhone, Apple Watch, your iPad device, and asks for help. And surprisingly, you find that you have the ability to turn back time. It is a forbidden magic. It is something that gets Ash into a little bit of trouble later, but hey, you just saved Ash's world. And we built out an epic fantasy interactive fiction that has over 225,000 words. It's just an incredible world to explore through the eyes of this character, Ash.
That's a pretty impressive amount of words for an interactive fiction game too, isn't it? That's a lot.
Yeah, it was not an easy journey. We worked real hard to get that far. You know, the very first version that we released in 2015 only had 20,000 words, and it was kind of an experiment. You know, we really wanted to tell the story. We didn't know if anyone would care or listen. We put it out. We got some good responses. We even received an award for Apple Watch Best of 2015. And so that really encouraged us, and we started writing, and now we're up to this gigantic word count, and we're not stopping anytime soon.
So, Alex, when did you kind of stumble onto Timecrest?
Well, I started playing it back in August of 2016. I was actually in Philadelphia doing some medical studies on me. I wasn't doing the studies. They were being
right.
performed on me. But I was there. I was bored. I was waiting for things to happen. And I had my watch, and I'd set up the Timecrest complication a little while ago. Just, you know, I figured eventually I'd check it out. So I was sitting there, and I opened it up. And I've actually pretty much checked in every day ever since. I think I've replayed it 4 or 5 times now.
Wow. That's, yeah. Yeah, very good.
We're so delighted to hear, you know, one of the things that we cared about this story, but you never know how people are going to react to it. And, you know, we've heard the same thing over and over again from so many people that they always want to check in and see how the characters are doing. And that kind of leads to the main thing we wanted to get across is this emotional connection between you and the characters of this game. Because, you know, I've been working in mobile gaming for over 5 years now. And as much as I love mobile games, one of the big sort of holes that I see in the whole industry is that the games don't really create that connection. You don't take away something emotional or lasting. They're really fun, but they're not memorable. In 10 years, you won't think back and think, these Candy Crush games or these Clash of Clan games are going to be anything you remember. So we're delighted that this seems to resonate, this emotional connection we've been trying to develop.
Something I thought was interesting, and frankly, I stumbled face first into this trap. I, in my mind, thought that Ash was a boy. But as I understand it, Ash is gender neutral. Is that correct? Or could be either one, I should put it that way.
Yeah, you know, this is something that we're not the only interactive fiction game to do this, but it was something that we really liked, and something that has actually been very challenging to keep up in such a large saga. But it's that the main character, Ash, can be a girl or can be a boy. And we have tried to be very clever in how we write the saga, that certain bits of the story actually are interpreted, could be interpreted differently depending on if you think that Ash is a boy or a girl. Certain scenes may seem very friendly on one gender and very romantic on another, and so on. And I think because as part of the whole theme of creating this emotional connection with the character, we want the character to be how you imagine that character.
I mean, that's one of the things, if anyone who's played the game, the characters really do draw you in. I mean, I don't want to do too many spoilers, but if someone dies in the game, and that can happen, you feel it. You really, I mean, I'm kind of curious, Alex, as to your thought about that. I mean, you really do care about these characters.
Yeah, I mean, the first time your spoiler warning here is tripping me up. So I guess if a character were to die in the story, especially the first time, you're really surprised. Like, you are physically, I can't believe that just happened. What did I do? Wow.
You feel responsible.
You do, exactly. That's it.
Yeah.
And Justin, if I can ask now, one of the things about connecting with characters is not just through your writing. You actually have done something really interesting I don't know if anyone else has done. You put your characters on Twitter.
That's correct, yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that and how that came about? Who does it? What's the deal behind that?
Absolutely. So, as part of making this interactive fiction, we thought that what would be more interactive than actually putting up some of our characters on Twitter and allowing you to directly interact with them. And this was a challenging thing too, because we knew that people would be at different points and different aspects of their story. And so we actually picked a point in time, sometime in chapter 8, before a big decision is to be made. And this is sort of where all of these characters exist on Twitter in terms of time frame. And we thought it would be fun because it allowed us to interact directly with people and see how they felt about the characters and how they what they wanted to know and what questions they had to ask of them. And it really, again, you know, we are very focused on building emotional connections to people. I'm going to keep saying it over and over again because that has been our number one goal. And just putting up our characters on Twitter and directly interacting with people is one of the best ways we could think of doing that. And I think we achieved it. I think that, you know, we talk with people every single day in character.
Yeah.
Our company is two people. We do everything pretty much. And on the Twitter, you might be getting me or my partner at any given day on Twitter.
So it's just the two of you. There's not interns or volunteers or anything that run these?
No. For all of the primary development of the game, all the coding, all the writing, all of the art, the graphics, the design, every single thing is done by the two of us. We have a volunteer that helps work on our forums, and that's about it.
That's excellent. That's very impressive considering the work that you guys have done. So let's turn for a little bit, and then we'll come back to the game itself. But let's talk a little bit about accessibility. You, as I understand it, received a letter from an AppleVis community member who said, hey, this is a great game, but there are some things that you could maybe do to make it more accessible to blind people. Tell us about that a little bit.
Absolutely. You know, my background, I've been writing software professionally for over 12 years. So abstractly, I've always understood that accessibility is important, but I've never felt that need personally, almost emotionally, because, you know, as a sighted person, it's very hard to sort of get into the mindset of how to develop software that is very accessible. So when this AppleViz user wrote to us, explained to us, you know, what VoiceOver was, said that we were 95% accessible, and said that TimeCrest was something that he loved to play, and gave us a little bit of advice on how to improve our game, that some of the aspects of the game were not labeled correctly, and there were some things that were a little bit confusing for a VoiceOver user, and linked us to AppleViz.com. So when we received this this email, I personally, it was a mix of emotions. At first, I was happy that we were accessible, but then I was absolutely embarrassed that we didn't even think of accessibility in the design process. So as soon as I received that email, we decided immediately we were going to rectify this. At that moment, accessibility became a number one priority for our application, for our game. And so I immediately wrote a post on AppleViz asking for feedback, and interacted with the community and tried to understand what the experience was for those people. But that wasn't enough. You know, I wanted to reduce as much of my sighted bias in the design as possible. And so I actually turned on Screen Curtain, which basically meant that I was using my phone blind. And for a period of about 6 weeks, I tried to use my phone as much as possible with Screen Curtain on to try to understand how Apple had designed VoiceOver, how, you know, what the standards were in different applications, and how things were labeled, you know, how everything worked, essentially. I learned that there were a lot of things I was frustrated in with TimeCrest, and eventually started developing a feature set, you know, some of the things like the pronunciation mode, the descriptive map, the text indicators, the sound effects for the VoiceOver cursor, the descriptive help, different UI flows. All of these things came about, and I tried to interact with AppleViz throughout the whole process. I was describing the features that I was thinking of, because at the end of the day, there's no way that I could become an expert on using these technologies like VoiceOver in such a short amount of time. So it was very important to me that I always got feedback on every step of the way.
It occurs to me, as you just literally went through about four or five features, we could turn this into a 2-hour interview, which we won't, but we could talk about, there's so much in that game. The sound effects being when a new message comes in, you hear a sound. When you've reached the end of a group of messages, you hear a different sound. When it's time for you to respond, you hear yet a third sound. And that's just the pronunciation mode being, if you would like to know the correct way to say the names of the people and the places in this world of Ash, VoiceOver will pronounce it correctly if you turn on this pronunciation mode. You've gone so far and above and beyond what a lot of developers have done that I don't even really quite know how to articulate it, except thank you, you know?
Definitely second.
You know, I really appreciate that, but all I can say is that all you need to do is step in another person's shoes. As soon as I turned Screen Curtain on and experienced the game and pretty much all the rest of the apps on my phone through that perspective, all of these features became obvious to us, you know, that it's the same mentality I have when I'm developing the UI flow for a sighted user, that until all of my annoyances are gone, essentially, I'm going to keep developing features and changing how the flows of everything works. And if there's any key pieces of information missing, you know, I'm going to be working on those things. So it's the exact same approach. And it's been great that I could actually take the right perspective to design these things.
So Justin, I'm really curious, as you were designing all the accessibility specific features and adjusting everything to make it work really well with VoiceOver, did you run into anything where you said, oh wait, now this doesn't work quite as well for sighted users, or I want to put this new thing in, but I can't because I've already added this accessibility thing and it's going to cause a problem? Anything like that?
Yeah, so there were a lot of challenges or differences as we were trying to think of things for VoiceOver for both sighted and blind users. Because one of the challenges is that ideally you want to have sort of one UI flow and one design that works well in all cases, but we learned pretty quickly that not everything should be the same. You know, for example, a lot of UI for sighted people rely on visual cues. For example, we use different colors to indicate when Kronos is speaking as opposed to when Ash is speaking. Mm-hmm. But obviously this is something that, you know, is not a fantastic indicator if you are blind, right? So you know, it's something where we probably would have designed that a bit differently if we had done it from the ground up. We wouldn't use colors in order to indicate certain things. So right now we have the voiceover text just read that the following is blue text, or the following is, you know, written in a red handwritten text, for example. But for me, this is a concession, a flaw in the design that we may not have done originally, for example.
Wow, that's interesting, because that doesn't, I mean, that never occurred to me of, because a lot of times, I was going to say, and Alex will know what I'm talking about, a lot of times when you're interacting with an app, you kind of realize, wow, that sort of works, but it sure would be nice if. But no, I never even considered that that was anything that you would have, you know, thought was less than optimal. So that's interesting to hear you say that.
Absolutely. I can give you another prime example, which is that in the UI for sighted users, when you select, let's say, a row in the pouch or the merchant, we actually pop up a little UI at the bottom of the screen that kind of gets out of the way, but indicates a description and several actions, like you can drink this aura potion. And that works very well for sighted users. But what we found was that when you're in VoiceOver, you want sort of the information and the actions to be near the VoiceOver cursor. Mm-hmm. It's just a little bit jarring when things are appearing in a random place on the screen. It's not clear that you know that that's where you need to go. And so, in fact, for that specific example, the UI has completely different flows. If VoiceOver is off, it will display that UI at the bottom of the screen. And if VoiceOver is on, then it will actually directly pop up the detail UI, which you can then perform the action from within. It's just a more natural flow when using VoiceOver.
So what are your thoughts as a developer about VoiceOver? I mean, is it easy to work with? Are there things that you would like to see that you would be able to do that you can't do? How do you think Apple's done on their screen reader?
I believe that there's a lot from Apple that we should celebrate. But that said, there are definitely drawbacks, things that I wish that VoiceOver could do. And fundamentally, I believe that VoiceOver's technology is a very passive one. I think that Apple's ideology or their point of view is that there's a static screen and VoiceOver is something where the user moves around a cursor with either their finger or a keyboard and everything gets read. But the problem with this ideology is it tends to work best for very static UIs, things where nothing changes over time or nothing animates. But changing or animating UI is needed for sighted users because it gives a sense of place or physicality for the relationships between UI elements for those people. And even aside from that, you know, a game like TimeCrest, which doesn't need animation for sighted people as much, the point is that a game is very dynamic. Things are always changing. The screen is constantly changing. Ash is sending you a new message. You take damage and different aspects of the UI are updated to indicate how much aura you have and so on. I don't know how nitty-gritty you want to get into it, but basically, all these dynamic scenarios don't work very well in VoiceOver. We don't have a lot of control over the VoiceOver cursor, about controlling where the cursor is. We've had a lot of bugs where people complain that when a new message comes in, sometimes the cursor jumps up to the top. And that's, you know, that's a dynamic situation that's difficult to control. Secondarily, any text that we're trying to send to be read by VoiceOver that isn't part of the cursor, you know, let's say that there's a state change, like you just spent 50 gold, so we want to announce to you have 150 gold. Mm-hmm. There, we don't have a lot of control around that that text that is read, that dynamic text, because it can easily be cut off. We don't have indications when it's done being read. So more concretely, basically, when a lot of people ask, well, when Ash sends a new message, can you just read it directly? And that is a feature that is very difficult to do with the current model, because if we do that, it could interrupt text that's already being read by VoiceOver. We don't know when that text is done being read, and so on.
So, Alex, as a programmer, does that resonate with you? Is there anything that you want to add to that or touch on there?
I guess I would say I definitely agree. You're certainly not the first developer we've heard from who would desperately love a way to know when VoiceOver is speaking or not speaking. It seems like that would solve a lot of the problems right there. you can already send text to just a TTS engine on the phone, you know, with whatever voice you want, and you can get notifications there. But VoiceOver itself, for some reason, is special, and Apple has never done that. And we've heard a lot of people over the years say, I wish I could just know when the thing is speaking or not, so that I could control better when I'm sending text and when I want it to speak. So I'd certainly say that you're not the first by any means.
All right.
I'm curious, though, if in all this testing you ever did much with Braille.
From what aspects?
Well, the testing. I mean, as you're going through all the voiceover things, I noticed, I think it's in one of the settings, when you can mm-hmm. enable, is it pronunciation mode?
Which yes.
There is mention that Braille display users may not want to use this or something along those lines. So I'm wondering if you had much interaction with Braille users or if you did any research on there, kind of what you think of the whole Braille display aspect of things.
Right. So unfortunately, we don't have a Braille display here. I'm unable to read Braille, but through our interactions from people, especially on Twitter, some of our users use Braille display, and so we got specific feedback around how they use the product. I haven't used it myself, but I've sort of come to understand how the Braille display works and interacts with VoiceOver. So what that is that pronunciation mode is actually something against Apple's recommendations. Apple does not like you changing the text in order to make things pronounce better. But yet, you know, so if you want to go for other features that I would wish for, I wish that I could give pronunciation hints to VoiceOver. If I could somehow give some indication as to how we intend some words like Alincia, Mount Asherah to be pronounced, Kronos, and Elise, for example. These are names within Timecrest. And so we added this pronunciation where it actually would change the text to sound more correct in VoiceOver. And it's very difficult, and it's kind of buggy because you can pick so many different accents and so many different voices, so it doesn't necessarily work on all of them, but usually does a better job. But the problem in doing so is that if you aren't listening to VoiceOver, but you're instead reading the text through Braille, then you don't gain much by having these strange spellings, because they're strictly intended for pronunciation. So that's why we put the recommendation that users turn pronunciation mode off if they intend to consume the text through a Braille display, so they actually get the correct spellings of things.
Wow. That makes sense, yeah.
Just the amount of detail you've given to the accessibility side of this just is astounding.
It really is. So let's shift back to a discussion of the game, and then we can kind of move to the future a little bit.
Sure.
Pun kind of intended. I didn't really know I was going to do that there, but that's okay. So you made reference earlier, Justin, to really kind of innovating in the area of writing for interactive fiction. Talk to us a little bit about what you've discovered and kind of what you're doing to maybe move things forward in that genre.
Sure, yeah. I'd love to talk about that. Both myself and Lisa have been very interested in writing throughout our lives, but this is the first time that we've come across trying to write interactive fiction. I try to read as much interactive fiction as I can. I won't call myself an expert that knows everything, but there were a couple of problems that we found kept creeping up. So one of them is something called Deus Ex Machina, which literally means the machines of God. And what happens is that it's easy to give your player too much power in the storytelling. If you've ever read a story where it just kind of deflates because it feels like, some external force has come in and solved all the characters' problems, it just feels very anticlimactic. And this was a problem we saw in a lot of interactive fiction, because they wanted to give the player a lot of power in what happens in the story. And a big problem with this is that all of storytelling is centered around conflict. You need bad things to happen. And, one of the choices we made was that bad things need to happen to the characters to have the ultimate conclusions feel satisfying. This is almost writing 101. And so one of the things that people, I think, frankly, weren't happy with us about, a decision we made, is that as you go through the story, there are character deaths that are inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
Who died? depends on which paths and choices you take, but you can't avoid any character death, because that is an integral part of the story we want to tell, an integral part of the character development of Ash that we wanted there to be. Because without conflict, you know, the story of Lord of the Rings, for example, is that Frodo needs to take the ring and throw it into the big volcano in the end, and it's a big journey to do that. Well, if you take away all the conflict, Gandalf could just have Frodo jump on an eagle, fly there, and drop the ring in. That story is in my Brandon Sanderson says that in one of his writing videos, but it is a great example of, you know, the writer's responsibility to create conflict, right? And this is a problem in interactive fiction. Secondly, a lot of the stories that have been popular lately on iOS are simple survival stories. Yeah. That it's almost like every choice is the right choice or the wrong choice. And we didn't like this either, because this felt like you were just sort of guessing and rolling the dice on where to go. And, you know, so we wanted every choice to be a real choice. You know, we wanted it that every choice you make should just get a different and satisfying plot with characters, payoffs, mysteries, and twists. There's no wrong path. There's just different stories to explore. Right. So, you know, these are sort of the two main things. And then finally, going back to the thing that I've always said, that character relationships matter, that we want you to feel things for these characters, and that character development is very, very important. And, you know, is sort of more important, in fact, than the plot or anything else.
That's really fascinating. I mean, there are times when you, the player, have to make, I found myself stopping and saying, would I do this thing in real life? I mean, and you know, a lot of interactive fiction is, okay, would I shoot somebody? You know, or if I, you know, do I want to be a gangster, or do I, it's a little more nuanced than that. It's like, would you make this decision knowing that some negative consequences could happen, but, you know, do I do the selfish thing, or, you know, it's hard to, because I don't, like I said, I really don't want to give spoilers too much for people who have not played the games. But it's not just a matter of, oh yeah, I'll just choose B. You know, it's a little more thoughtful than that. If you play through the game and you do it seriously and you take your time. The first time I played through it kind of quickly. Mm-hmm. The second time I really slowed down, and it's amazing how much different the experience is when you take the time to play.
Yeah. You know, we put a lot into it that, you know, this is a game that is meant to play many times over and over again, because we put a lot of detail. And sometimes, you know, a question or a mystery is put into one path that you have to play through and visit the other path in order to experience. And one of the ways that we made the choices, we wanted the choices to be hard, but we didn't want any choice to be wrong. And part of the way we did that is that we put a lot of gray area in it, that we did not want to have characters that were strictly good or strictly evil. That, you know, we developed our characters to the point where even the most evil of our characters, if we told the story from their point of view, we hope that you would be rooting for them, if that makes sense. That in a sense, every character is the hero of their own world. We just happen to be watching from Ash's point of view. So, you know, that creates villains, and that creates friends, and that creates conflict. But you can see that, you know, we think life is complicated, and we think one of the things that makes us resonate is that we have put sort of that complexity of life into this simple story.
You know, I never really thought about it as I was playing it, but thinking back to the few times I have, you're exactly right. It's not just a survival yes no binary choice thing. It's like you're watching actual characters, actual people living actual lives. You know, exactly as you said, you can think that someone is horribly bad because they did this thing, but then, well, no, they did this other thing and now they're not bad. And it's a lot more real than a lot of the interactive fiction or even the regular fiction you might find. And the fact that it's interactive and that it's so realistic and so close to how actual people live actual lives really makes it a lot more engaging. And it never struck me before exactly why this is such an engrossing game, but I think that's a lot of it, is just the realism and the similarity to how true people would actually find themselves experiencing similar events if they were to happen to them. You know, no one's good, no one's bad. Everyone's just trying to do the best they can with what they see as the right and the wrong ways to go.
That's, from the writer's point of view, that's exactly what I want to hear, that you didn't even notice that, because the writer never wants you to see the man behind the curtain, essentially. Right. We're hoping that, you know, we put a lot of thought into the plot and the structure and everything, all the writer things, you know, I'll call them. But if we've done a good job on it, we shouldn't be hitting you over the head with them. You should just be enjoying the story for what it is.
Exactly. Well, and I find it interesting. I don't know that I've never seen this in any other interactive fiction that I've played. Is that Ash doesn't always take your advice, mm-hmm. which is really kind of frustrating sometimes.
Yeah,
and that's you asked me to do what I thought you should do, and I told you, and no, you're not going to do that.
Yeah, and that is actually something we did very purposefully. We didn't want to frustrate the players, so right. We tried not to do that too much. But it was important that we established that Ash will not always do what you say, because Ash is a person. Ash is a real character. You are not Ash. You are talking to Ash. You are interacting with Ash. But sometimes what you want and what Ash wants are different. And these are the things I think required to also make that emotional connection. If this person feels like an empty shell that is actually just you, then you won't feel connected to Ash.
So Justin, I'm wondering, you've talked a lot about all of this from a programming standpoint, you know, you're a game developer and all this, and then you've talked a lot about it as a writer. What are you? Are you kind of both nowadays? Where did you start writing and programming? Kind of what's the deal with mixing the two together like this?
That's a great question. By trade, I have been a programmer, a computer engineer for a long time. As I said before, I've worked at Google. I've worked at Microsoft on Xbox Live and Zune. I worked at Storm 8, which is a mobile gaming company. And I was a programmer for all of that time. But I've always been interested in story, from all the way back to when I played games like Final Fantasy, which were these big JRPGs with long involved stories. And I've always wanted to write stories. I was in the drama club in high school and I directed plays, and I've always been trying to write little screenplays and so on. And my co-founder Lisa has always been a writer. She has been working on the great unpublished American novel. And, you know, we thought that when we founded this company, this would be a great time to put all of our experience in game design and in programming. You know, she used to be a game director. So she's very experienced with making mobile games, and we're both writers. So it just made sense that Timecrest would be the thing that we would collaborate on in order to make this.
Well, right now the game is in what, two sections, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. And I understand from what you've said earlier or to me in the past, there are more installments coming, right?
Yes, there are. We have released Timecrest 1, Faded Connections, and we have released Timecrest 2, The Door. Those are all within the same app. And most recently, we released The Memory Oracle, which is a collection of short stories that really fill you in on the answers to a lot of the questions we raised about our some of our favorite characters. It's 25,000 more words, sort of revealing plots and details about them. So what's next? Well, I can exclusively reveal to you the name of the next part of Timecrest, and what people sort of on the Twitter sphere have been calling Timecrest 3, we call it Luther Timecrest. And the next few chapters that we will release will be very focused on Kronos and his storyline. And by the end of this part of the saga, you'll learn a lot about who Kronos is and what his motivations are as a very, very important character in this story. We don't have a release date yet. We're working hard on it, but we're very, very excited to tell more about the story of Luther Timecrest.
That is exciting for all of us who are avid Timecrest fans. That's very good. Are there any plans for, and I can't imagine what they would be, but is there anything that you want to do more with voiceover that is available right now to you?
That's a great question. I think that one of the things that I would like to improve actually is our Apple Watch accessibility. When we undertook the voiceover update and all of those features that we added, we focused on iOS, on iPhone, iPad, because we found that most voiceover users were there, and there were far less on the Apple Watch side. But one of the things I would like to do is do a pass on Apple Watch as well, because I know that, you know, we're missing some of the labels, and some of the things don't work quite as well on the Apple Watch. And I wanted to take some time to explore how we can improve our Apple Watch accessibility.
Very good. Excellent. That'll be exciting. So what would be a great way for people, because there's actually probably several ways people can get a hold of you or the characters, but if a person wants to talk to the developers themselves, what's the best way to get a hold of you guys?
There's a lot of ways to reach us. First, we're very active on the Apple Biz forums. There's a few threads on TimeCrest that we check all the time. So talk to us there. You can always email us directly, support@sneakycrab.com, and you will reach either me or Lisa, and we would be happy to discuss absolutely anything with you. And Twitter, if you go to the TimeCrest Twitter page, then we are also extremely active there and love to talk about TimeCrest and answer any questions and take all sorts of feedback. We absolutely love feedback. The reason that TimeCrest was successful in voiceover was because of this incredible community, that every single person gave us great feedback. Every single time people said this works well, or were deeply critical of our game, we love that, because, you know, we make this for you. We want to create this emotional connection with you. And I hope people continue to give us as much feedback as possible and tell us, you know, where if there's a stain on our shirt or if we're doing well. That's what makes TimeCrest great.
Or if an avid blogger like Alex might find some grammatical things.
Absolutely.
He might...
No, you know that Alex has been hard on our spelling and grammar, and we actually have absolutely loved all of his input. You know, you're essentially our unofficial editor. It is definitely embarrassing when we have mistakes like that. And though it's not an excuse, you know, it comes from being very ambitious and being only a two-person team. Sure. We want to bring such an expansive story. And, you know, every single day, we kind of ended TimeCrest 2 on a cliffhanger. So every single day, we have people bugging us about when the next bit of content is. And when you're talking about future things, yeah, spelling and grammar is something that we definitely want to improve upon. And we're lucky to have someone like Alex who is helping us out on that so tremendously.
Yeah. Well, Justin, thank you so much for taking the time to visit with us on this Apple Extra. You've got a lot of insight and you've done a lot of hard work. And I think I can speak for the entire community when I say thank you very much for that.
Thank you. It's been a ride. We launched our update in only September. That was only a few months ago. And the community has been just so incredible and inviting. And we look forward to a very accessible 2017.
So go on over to the AppleVis forums, check out everything that's over there regarding the game, a lot of comments from players as well as the developers. You can certainly find me on Twitter, twitter.com/JamiePauls, JamiePauls. Alex, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Twitter as well, probably. I'm MEHGCAP, that's M as in Mike. Just in case my mic isn't working great. Oh, Mike, I didn't even plan that. I'm funny.
Nice.
I know it.
Yes, I had to look that up earlier today. That's not one of those easy Twitter handles, man. Just saying.
No, I've had that forever, and I want to change it, but I don't have anything better, and everyone knows it now, so I'm kind of stuck with this horrible, horrible word for any screen reader to pronounce and for anyone to remember. But for those who do remember it, I can't change it on them, so I'm sort of between a rock and a hard place.
Fair enough. Well, thanks, everyone, for listening. We'd love to hear from you. Let us know what you think or maybe what you'd like for an upcoming extra. We'd love to hear that as well. Take care and have a very prosperous and happy and healthy 2017.
This podcast was brought to you by the team at Apple This. For more information and resources to help you get the best experience from your Apple device, visit the Apple This website at www.applethis.com, where you can also contact the Apple This team.